We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, Shane, in my inbox, you're actually one of the guys that keeps showing up and, hey, have this guy on. I don't know what people think. They think, like, if you come on and we do a show together that something crazy is going to happen. But, you know, I mean, I would have you on even if they didn't ask because I enjoy talking to you. Well, we've worked together for the last few weeks. So, you know, welcome to the RotoWire podcast. And I'm just curious if you believe that people are too patient or not patient enough with rookies as we get into our bus concept conversation here.
I'm going to say too patient. And what I mean by that is after year one, like when you have a full year of data on a rookie, a lot of people like to hold on to their priors. I'll just keep trashing the same names over and over, but they prove my point. Jameson Williams. Oh, well, he was injured. You should have expected him not to do well the next year. Oh, well, he was suspended. Somehow that was not his fault. Oh, he was suspended. And then he showed out in that one playoff game. Treylon Burks. It's not his fault. Bad offense, blah, 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 blah. I find that people just hold on to those wide receivers way longer than they should.
So if somebody doesn't, is there been an example where, okay, so if you're going to adopt that overall philosophy when identifying busts, there's going to be exceptions to the rule. I'm just trying to think, is there anybody that didn't perform at least to somewhat expectation in year one and then actually took off and you were like, okay, all right, I got that one wrong. I'm just trying to think, is there anybody in the last 5 years that happened with?
5 years? I don't know. Because
10 years?
10 years, how old's Devontae Adams? Devontae Adams is the one that always gets thrown at me. Chris Godwin. There's a few other names along those guys that are outliers, but people remember them because, well, they went on the smash, and you don't remember bad players that disappear into the ether. Like right. In 4 years, absolutely no one's going to even remember Sky Moore. You're going to go, who? Oh, yeah, I remember that guy. That was fun. It's just you just don't remember those guys.
Right. So, you know, those are okay. Those are rookies that come in that don't perform enough. We're going to talk about those type of players that for the following year who we should be in and out on. But is there anything, what do you do when you're trying to like figure out who the busts are for the incoming rookie class? Is there a specific metric? Is it more of just an observation or a feel? So, you know, everyone has their, you see on all social media, people have their take on, oh, this guy's going to bust. But I always like, you know, to get an understanding, what is it about this player that usually indicates that there's at least a yellow flag for you?
I would say not a power conference. That's one of my big things. A player that it used to be a late breakout age, right? But I don't know if we can count on that anymore because of the COVID.
Why?
Extra year. Well, the COVID and then the NILs. So now you have players that might have come out after 3 years as a third round receiver, and they go, you know what, let me just stay in, I'm already getting paid, and then bust out in their fourth year, and then all of a sudden they move up. To me, it is a guy that only has 1 year of production, and it's their last year. Old wide receivers, even though there's been wide receivers that have been old and it worked out, guys like Calvin Ridley. But for the most part, an old wide receiver is probably something that scares me that goes to a non-power conference.
So it's specifically it's the level of competition. Is that a fair?
That's one of the bigger things for me. Like I said, obviously you want them to check certain benchmarks physically. Yeah. Although again, that's going to be harder to determine as the high end wide receivers are like, well, I'm not going to, why would I work out? Like, there's no reason for me to, I'm 1 and 2. I'm probably going to be the wide receiver 1 in my draft, not in the rookie draft, the fantasy draft, but in the real draft. That's the one they care about.
But you would have to think like Corey Coleman, right? Or Laquan Treadwell, they wouldn't have done this, right? Like, they needed to work out, right? I mean, Marvin Harrison, when the media is telling you, and when, you know, when football Twitter is telling you, oh my God, this is the next Julio Jones. Like, when you're talking about Marvin Harrison Jr., that's going to feed into them with the player empowerment and them not working out. But, you know, as we're, for example, like, okay, last year, it doesn't matter what side you're on, but there was enough talk about Quentin Johnston possibly being a bad pick in the first round. Like, nobody said that about Jordan Addison, right? They're like, okay, at worst, he'll be like a good, you know, wide receiver 17, wide receiver 2 for your right. team for the next few years. What do you think it was about Quentin Johnston? I don't know where you fell on that spectrum, but like, when you see players like that, how can we, I guess, put those at least on our radar? So when we're making choices in the back end of our rookie drafts, we could at least make an informed decision if this guy has bust potential or not.
Well, I think one of the good indicators is that everybody is out on him. Like, I don't know. I can't think of one legitimate, other than taking a contrarian take, fantasy analyst, draft analyst, which is more important for this take, that was in on him. It was more, well, he's going to be a high, he's going to be drafted in the first, so you have to take him. And that was the only reason you were taking him in rookie drafts, was going, oh, he's good draft capital. He drops passes too much. He doesn't run good routes. He really didn't produce at an elite level. Like, there was literally no reason to like Quentin Johnston that I could think of. Yeah. Like, his breakout age. There you go. His breakout age was good, and his college target share was good. But other than that, he was pedestrian, just all around pedestrian. Like, I don't remember one legitimate, like, scout type of person that was like, yeah, this dude is it. This dude is going to be real. So if everybody hates a player, you know, I don't like to always go with the crowd, but sometimes you just got to listen to the crowd, especially when it's scouting takes and that's not your strength.
Right. And, but also, like, land, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about landing spot, which basically encompasses like team context, your quarterback, how many players are ahead of you, the coaching staff, the offensive scheme. So there was a lot to like there for Quentin Johnston. It's just, anyone who was out on him last year. And again, the reason we're talking about Quentin Johnston is because you and I want to try to figure out who some of those red flag, yellow flag guys might be for this year. But, you know, yet everyone thought of Herbert as a top 2 or 3 or 4 quarterback in the real NFL. And then he dropped this rookie who's got first round draft pedigree into that situation in an offensive environment. And then he gets opportunity. I mean, I agree with what you just said that, hey, if everybody's saying at least listen to it, but it seemed like the situation was perfect for him last year when we're talking about Johnston.
Yeah, but you have to be good to take advantage of your situation. And sometimes it's that simple. He's not good at football. I mean, he's obviously better than me. Like, he could destroy me in a game of 1-on-1, but against NFL caliber players, not so much, not so much. But people will give themselves a narrative this year. Look, there's absolutely no one there. So his target share right now should probably be 50% next year between him and Josh Palmer, right? That's all that's left. So people convince themselves as to why he's going to hit next year. But no one liked him. The player that we were just talking about him in the Patreon chat. Hey, join the Dynasty Trades and 5 Patreon. I don't know what the sign up is, but go do that. We're talking about Sky Moore. Sky Moore's a guy I talked myself into 2 years ago. And there's a few guys I've talked myself into. Any wide receiver that the Eagles ever drafted, Jalen Reagor, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, guys like that. But Sky Moore was a guy. I was like, dude, he landed in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes. Can the situation get any better than that? Yeah, he went to a mid-school. Talked myself into him, and he just ended up being a complete bust, and he's completely useless.
Yep. Is there anybody off the bat here that gives you those kind of vibes that, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you've done a few rookie mock drafts. And, you know, in our mind, we have a basic framework of what players are going to go where in our first round of our super flex drafts. A lot of wide receivers, right? I mean, there's certainly, you know, some tier breaks happening depending on where the quarterbacks go. But is there anyone in that, if you have pick 8 through 12, is there a player off the bat, and we can get into a little bit more specifically, that's giving you those Quentin Johnston vibes? Treylon Burks from the year before, right now?
I'm not touching Ladd McConkey. I know he showed out at the combine. Everybody's like, oh, well, dude, if this dude was just healthy throughout his career, or if this, then that, then he would have been productive in college and all this good stuff. Sure. But he wasn't. He has literally no breakout age. I'm looking at player profile. He never broke out. His college target share sucked. His dominator rating, not good. I don't know what his score is on J.J. Zacharyson and Zap score, but I'm guessing it's not good. Or whatever JJ calls it now. I forget. I think he just renamed it. But whatever it is, I'm sure it's not good. But people love him because he showed out.
Yeah. I mean, will draft capital for someone like that that has the, you know, the poor metrics or the lack of dominator or breakout, if he does get drafted in a as a top 40 pick that in a situation that you would say at least like, would that change your mind at all? Or you're just going to go player specific on a guy like this and say, hey, I'm not taking him in my first pick in my rookie drafts?
Absolutely not taking him. Absolutely not. Now, one thing I do have to get better at, right? So if he's sitting there at 204, I need to understand that, you know what? Other people do like him, or at least he had some hype. So if he does anything in camp, maybe his value will spike. So maybe I should draft him on the hope that I can trade him. But I probably won't do that because there'll be a player there that I'm like, well, this player is actually going to have some real utility to me. Whereas I'm just hoping that Ladd McConkey does something, anything, so that I can trade him later, because that's just a dangerous proposition for me. But I'm definitely not taking it.
This is why I love having guys like you on, because we see the game of Dynasty, you know, we love it the same, and we see it very differently. You're very trade-centric, which, by the way, makes sense that you're, you know, a key part of the Dynasty Trades in Five show. The whole show is based on trading. And the way I play Dynasty, it might seem counterintuitive, but I don't like to trade, right? I mean, I'll trade when necessary, but there's other edges I like to grind. And but again, I'm not saying my way is the way. I just love hearing counterpoints because, and you could attest to this, we all get in our little bubbles with our own audience and our own leagues, and we think like this is the way everybody plays. And I forget sometimes I go into other, and I listen to a lot of content. I listen to you guys all the time. I listen to, you know, Matt Kelly and Theo and all the great Dynasty creators. And everyone has such a different way of thinking about, not necessarily player takes, but the way we think about the game. And I guess really one of the questions when we're talking about like figuring out busts, Shane, is are there any key metrics or indicators that you see, because you talked about dominator rating, is there anything else that might be a signal for a yellow flag that a rookie might struggle in the NFL?
Other than the analytical stuff, like obviously like simple things like target share. I know there's advanced analytics that go beyond that, but basically account for that. Anytime you see someone can't dominate at a college level when they aren't in the situation of, say, I don't know, Emeka Ogbuka, or Chris Olave, you know what I mean? Where there's four wide receivers on the team that are all going to be first round draft capital, you should absolutely dominate targets. Like look at Malik Nabers. He's sharing the field with Brian Thomas, who's going to be also probably a first round NFL draft pick, but it didn't affect him negatively. So that's probably the biggest thing. And just,
Can I ask why? I mean, it seems kind of obvious, but I want to hear it verbalized out here. Like, why is target share such an important thing for you?
I mean, targets are earned, right? That's I think everybody agrees upon that. If you're not dominating targets, if you're not earning targets, you're not getting open. I'm not smart enough to figure out why. Your quarterback doesn't trust you. Whatever it is, you're not earning targets. Your quarterback, your team doesn't look at you as an elite asset, doesn't even look at you as, depending on the share, a good asset. You know, you're just a guy on the team. So sure, you could dominate targets in certain situations if everything goes correctly. Say you're around other players that are bad. You should absolutely house those targets. You should be looking at 25, 30% target shares. If you can't do that with bad wide receivers on your roster, what are you going to do if they have actual legitimate ones at it? And the way the NFL is, there's not many teams that have just one legitimate wide receiver. Now, there's some teams that have none. They have one. Now they have one. Carolina has one. But that's the exception, the more the rule. I mean, especially with all the wide receiver talent coming into the league now, there's generally at least two wide receivers on the roster that are at least really good.
All right. So, yeah, now that's the target share. Now, is there a threshold you like? What's the percentage? Again, I know it's not like an exact science, but for you, when you're doing your evaluations, because again, we're trying to identify who the rookie bust could potentially be just based on the metrics, observations. We all know there's always going to be a Puka Nacua, Tank Dell, who over-deliver on where you drafted them. And there's going to be guys that, you know, Quentin Johnson, Treylon Burks, who just don't deliver at all. So what is that target share number? Is there a percentage that you like, a threshold that you like to see minimum in order for them not to fall into the, hey, I'm not taking them?
Sorry. I'd say at least, so it's not binary for everyone, but 25% is what you would hope for, right? A quarter of the target seems like a fair amount to get to, even on a college roster. And like I said, in a college roster, hopefully it'd be a little more because there generally aren't two stud wide receivers on every team. Again, there's exceptions. Ohio State has 30 stud wide receivers just in the pipeline at all times. LSU, for some reason, seems to have two first round wide receivers on their roster most of the time. So except for those exceptions.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
That works. That works. For those exceptions.
You know what my favorite part about you is? You say what's in parentheses out loud. You know, parentheses supposed to be the silent part. You know, but I love that because you're letting us behind. You know, you're seeing the guy behind the curtain. I mean, that's what's so beautiful about you, Shane.
It is beautiful. I am beautiful. I've been told that many, many times.
Are you sweating? I see you. Wiping your brow here. Are you in a room without air conditioning or something?
Oh yeah, no air conditioning. And the what do you call that? The dumpster guy is like outside right now. So I'm trying to time this perfectly in between them picking up the dumpster.
We can't hear anything.
I'm trying to make sure because that makes for poor radio when you listen back on it when it sounds like my apartment's being, you know, demolished.
Is that where you are? Okay, because you know this the room that you're in here. It looks like you're like being interrogated in an Iraqi prison right now. I mean, there's like, you know, the spotlight's on you. It's, you know, your hands might be cuffed to the table here. Are you being probed right now? Well, am I forcing this information out of you? Or
a little, you a little bit. Okay. Look, I am not good at interior decoration. if you noticed, I have one picture behind me. I just put that up like 6 months ago because I had nothing there for the first 3 years I was here. I don't decorate very well. I mean,
we're dudes.
Single male.
Yeah, we're dudes. We don't decorate well. But no, you're doing great and you sound great. And like I said, a lot of people are going to listen to this on the podcast feed. So I'm trying to create theater of the mind for them. Most of our listenership will come from the audio podcast, but we like to show out for our YouTube audience as well, Shane. All right. Something that I like to talk to dynasty players about is, what do you think the biggest mistake that even experienced dynasty players continually make? Now, that could be in existing leagues, startups, or even rookie evaluation as we figure out busts.
So I did already say that I can't repeat it, but I will. Holding on to your previous takes. People don't like to pivot. People will die on a hill just to die on a hill, which I don't understand. 2 years ago, or whenever Chris Olave came out, hated him. I absolutely couldn't stand him because I bought into the narrative that dude was weak. He had no yards after the catch. I think his entire college career, that might be an exaggeration a little bit. I'm not sure. Yeah, I know. I got to get some wall decorations. So I was completely out on Chris Olave, right? But his rookie year hits, and I'm like, you know what? I was 1,000% wrong in this dude. Last year, Puka Nacua, I go, after week one, like, that's cute. You're never going to hear of him again. I'm sending out tweets like, just for reference, here's who was the wide receiver one of the first week the year before.
Take any second for him, that type of stuff, right?
Right. Yeah. Second week, you know, he goes out and smashes again. I go, all right, I'm probably want to pay attention to this a little bit more. Week three, it's like, all right, he's got the most receiving yards of any rookie in his first three games ever and receptions and targets. It's like, all right, you know what? At this point, I just need to change my take, except that my take was wrong. I think people they don't like to do that. And I mean, I get why, I guess, you know, ego.
Psychology of it, right? Of being wrong.
You want to be right. I get that. But it's not always the most important to be right first. It's just important to be right at some point during the process. So a lot of people will just hold on to their takes forever. I don't know why. Well, we got into that. They will just hold on to their takes. Me, I think I'm easily pivotable, and I will pivot when I have reason to.
Yeah, well, I had Sigmund Bloom from Football Guys on here last week, and he said something that you just underlined. I think you said it in a different way, but it's not fantasy football. Like, there's almost no edge. You've been playing fantasy a long time. Do you remember when just like reading RotoWire or reading RotoWorld or one of these things was the edge? Your league mates didn't even know what news was going on. Or some people in my league who were smart football people didn't even know who like the wide receiver three on a team was. Now everyone gets notifications. Everyone knows every injury. Everyone knows every depth chart. So the edge is what you just said, is reacting to information before everybody else does, changing your mind about the trajectory of a player, and I guess not having take lock is the edge in right, fantasy football. Right. So,
you know, it's interesting. So, and I think this is part of it too, right? You don't want to be too wishy-washy, is not the word I'm looking for, but I'll use wishy-washy. Like, you don't want to change your takes too easily too, I guess, because it's every week you'll just be like, I like this player. Now I don't like this player. Although in today's dynasty market, and KTC and all the folks that are coming from redraft, that probably isn't that bad of an idea, because you're usually, you don't like to trade that much. But me, I'm like, hey, I can make a profit this week now. Like, yeah, someone in there, Drake London stock up. I looked on KTC. I was all in on like, yes, Drake London's going to be much better this year. I go look on KTC. I'm like, this dude's wide receiver 10. Like, no. I need to trade this gentleman. This dude needs to go. And it's not that I don't like Drake London. I don't like him at that cost when he's never produced better than a wide receiver 42 season.
But isn't there reasons for that? Like, okay, so if we could tell ourselves the story that he was wide receiver one in his class, all his yards per route run stuff and all the metrics that, you know, under the hood stuff that people like are good, but bad environment, right? When we can go into the quarterback, the coach, this, that, and now all of that stuff is pushed away. There is reason for optimism, but what you're saying is that still bet up against that optimism, and more times than none, you're going to profit in the long run.
Yeah, at that price, I'm completely. Now, if he was wide receiver 15, wide receiver 20, all right, you know, that's not much of a risk from where he was prior to that. You know, that's maybe I got to add an extra second to it. But now to get him on my roster, like, I got to pay up, and that means there's much more risk. And I love Drake London coming out of college. I'll put that out there. And I understand his situation was bad, but there's a lot of players whose situations were bad. Just for instance, Chris Olave's situation, not particularly great last year, right? Derek Carr, pretty bad, objectively. He was still the wide receiver 19. And even that was a disappointment compared to what we thought he was going to be. Garrett Wilson was a top 33 wide receiver, I think, which isn't great, but it's still better than what Drake London did. And I'd argue his quarterback situation was just as bad, if not worse, in general. So it's just the risk there from that jump to where he was to where people are getting him at the wide receiver 10. That's just too much for me. And I like him, but not at that price. I'm going to move off of him. And here's a good thing is if I get the wide receiver 10 price, even if I'm wrong, I got paid out for him. I cashed out and I hopefully use those assets for something else.
Let me use a format that you're a little bit more familiar with. And I'm saying that kind of exaggeration for clarification is like, so Brandon Ayuk and a third round pick or Drake London, which one, because those two guys are going to be similarly valued by the market, you know, around the 10 to 14 value. So I know you like a little plus on top. That's a term that I've heard you guys use a lot. So Ayuk and 2.10, I'll give you like a late second. So it's got a two in front of it, or Drake London.
This is where I do fall into the trap. I go, you'd be able to get more for Drake London than that, right?
Right, but that's the best offer, and you want to get off him.
That's the best offer.
You can decline it. You're allowed to decline
it. Yeah, I know. I'm thinking it through. I would probably, and this is going to annoy people, I play in 31 leagues, right? So I'm also going to look at my portfolio and go, well, I already have 6 Brandon Ayuk shares, which I do. I only have 3 of Drake London. It probably doesn't pay to grab another Brandon Ayuk share if the only plus is a late second rounder, which is basically a third rounder. For that, I'll hold. And I'll go, you know what? Maybe Drake London comes out and smashes his week one, and everybody is now there. Absolutely, they have conviction behind it. Like, you know what? Yes, this is happening. Hopefully, I'll have enough discipline to go, you know what? All right, now I'm going to move him now that I think the price can rise.
Well, then I think what I'm trying to do is prosecute the case here is that you're saying that Drake London doesn't belong as wide receiver 10. And I push back and say, but you're not willing to move off for a marginal player. You're going to want, like, you're thinking that if I could take Drake London and add something to him to get into the big three, the big four, that's how you're thinking about this. Not, hey, can I quote tear down from an unproven asset marginally for some pick that at the end of the day probably won't hit anyway.
Yeah, I'm not a giant fan. It's going to annoy people. I'm not a giant fan of the tear down. In certain situations, obviously, I do. When, you know, my roster is super barren and it goes, well, I need to split this asset. Like, I just have to. Like, there's a league I'm in that's, I think, 14 teams start 13. And Garrett Wilson is my best player by far. And I'm like, dude, I need to split this guy. Like, for almost anything. Like, I'll take a 109 and a future first and no one will do it because it's so many starters. I forget what the original point was. So I just.
No, the point was about tearing down. So, okay. So we're talking about Drake London, right? And this goes for any player who you think is overvalued by the market, right? And we're trying to figure out here in this particular exercise is what do you do with that? Do you just hold him and say, hey, man, I've always liked him? Do you move down marginally to add more assets? Or it sounds like your basic philosophy is to take a player like that who you think is overvalued and not get out and get more, but to move up.
I am fine with getting more, but the more has to be better than 210. It has to be something that I can actually use. And even if it's just an earlier second, because that's a lot more valuable on the trade market than a late second. A late
until second, you're on the clock, right? Because sometimes these good running.
Right. Yeah. And then someone, you know, and there's not in the leagues I'm in anymore, but there's a lot of leagues I used to be in where someone, you're on the clock at 209 and someone's like, I'll give you a future first. And you're like, okay, sure. But I don't think that happens much anymore. Like a lot of people are sharper than they used to be and realize, well, that's a very bad bet. Let me just hold on to the first. So I'm willing to split. Like a player I was looking at last night, I was discussing Drake London and maybe moving off of him. And I was saying Rashee Rice and a pick. Could it be Jordan Addison and a pick? Now, Jordan Addison, everybody told me, well, they would take Drake London over Jordan Addison in a second. So, all right, let me readjust my thought process then, because that's not enough, because it was like unanimous. And I'm like, if 80% of the people I'm asking this are saying they'll take the other side, well, that's not enough. I need to get more back. So I moved it to Rashee Rice in like a 25 first. Can I move Drake London and a second, don't care what number, for Rashee Rice in a future first?
All right. Shane, I got a few bills to pay right here. So I just want to tell everybody about our newest sponsor to the podcast. So if you don't mind, it's called On Demand DFS. Do you ever think back to the golden days of fantasy football? You know, when it was all about the love of the game and the camaraderie and yes, the bragging rights. Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back to their revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to trash talk with your league mates. On Demand DFS is here. Streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. I think you guys know a little bit about that, right? Building a community. With our On Demand DFS, you can create contests in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker, Shane. You're not limited to the current season of players. Imagine crafting your dream team lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate to wait, you'll love the turbo mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download On Demand DFS app now and get started with our 30-day free trial. Dive into fantasy football experience that's rich history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create the legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends. Live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. I had never heard of On Demand DFS before this, so I will definitely check them out. Sounds like something interesting, right? A lot of games come out, but this one has like a nice little historical twist.
I want to just put Jerry Rice in there. That's all I want. Jerry Rice, I'm guessing he's probably expensive. I'm going to just guess.
Yeah, but still. Yeah. I mean, all right, give me one guy at each position historically if you were creating the ultimate fantasy team.
And I have biases. All right, I'm going Priest Holmes for running back.
Okay.
He was the first one of his kind, I think.
Yep. Obviously, not. Jerry, I thought you were going to say LT2, whatever.
But LT was after Priest Holmes, right? I'm getting
old. I believe so. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They're similar. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, LT changed the way he's the reason for third round reversal. You know that, right? Like that's why. Yes. Because in the high stakes leagues, it was just a complete unfair advantage to have LT. Cause so they created third round reversal. And then obviously
had to even it out.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. One player had that impact.
He was today, that much better. Yeah.
Today that, I guess that the corollary would have been Christian McCaffrey at his prime.
Right. But even LT at his prime was still even he was 35 points a game.
Yeah, that's true. He was absolutely ridiculous.
All right. Wide receiver, you said Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice. Got to be Jerry Rice. I know some people say Moss. But no, Jerry Rice, running back.
Tight end.
Priest Holmes. Tight end. I mean, can you not go Gronk? Healthy Gronk. Yeah, I'm still going healthy Gronk.
Yeah.
Healthy Gronk.
Three touchdown upside in every game.
Yeah, dude. Plus, he was just fun to watch. So there's going to be that while I'm cheering him on. All right. Quarterback.
Who's the ultimate fan? Is it Michael Vick? Peak Michael Vick?
So good. No, this is going to be a homer pick. And I'm old. Randall Cunningham.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Here's the I'm moving Randall Cunningham from his era into this era where they know how to coach a player like that. Because I'll tell you right now, Randall Cunningham would be better than any quarterback today with that coaching and the acceptance of that skill set. That skill set wasn't exactly accepted back then, and they didn't know what to do with it. So they were like, dude, run around and do something.
Were you a Tecmo Bowl guy back in the day? Did you ever play that video game? Do you remember Randall Cunningham? They didn't get the license for his name. So you remember what they called him in the game?
No.
QB Eagles. That was his name, QB Eagles.
We used to have just Tecmo Bowl sessions where we would just sit in the house at somebody's house for, I don't even know, like 15 straight hours playing Tecmo Bowl tournaments. That was such a great game.
The reason, in my opinion, that Tecmo Bowl became like the game was because it, to my knowledge, it was the first game that counted stats in real time. So if Bo Jackson had 125 stats, it showed 125 yards rushing. It showed you those stats and it carried over if you were doing seasonal mode. Like, I think if you didn't like finish a game, it didn't save them. But that's why, because it showed you your statistical output. Before that, it was just like standalone game. Like, what's the first video football game that you can even remember? Is it Tecmo Bowl?
Oh, so Jesus. No, even before that, there was, remember Tiger Games?
Yeah,
of course. Handheld games. There was a football game on that. That was, if you look at it now, even know if you could. I don't even know if anyone would understand what you're looking at. But that's the first one I remember. I just remember playing crate ball and putting my Tiger handheld down to the side and then playing later. Yeah, Bo was a cheat code in Tecmo Bowl. Like, there was he was just fighting people off and then going. There's nothing to do.
Bo Jackson was a cheat code, and also the cross pass to Roger Craig on the 49ers was a cheat code too.
Underrated player, but we're old. And dude, I mean, the drop back was always the same. Just drop back as far as you can and then let it rip.
Yep.
And I've tried that same technique in Madden, and it does not work as well. Never works as well.
Totally. There was also a game on Atari going back in the day that was called 10-Yard Fight. That was one of my first exposures. But again, it's so antiquated and so slow, the game. You would just be so frustrated. All right, Shane. Let's continue on with our how we identify a bus. And this is, take a little walk with me here down Narrative Street, if you don't mind. A player's character off the field, or at least perceived, media-driven or actual character, will that factor in to how you identify a bust at all, or you just totally push that stuff to the side?
I don't care, unless they're getting arrested, unless it's actually affecting their on-field performance. Like, are they such a douchebag that they got suspended? Are they arguing with teammates on the sideline and they're missing plays? Outside of that, I don't care. Like, you could be a terrible human being, and I don't know if this sounds crass, but I don't care about these dudes off the field. Like, it's great when they're great people. Good for them. That is awesome.
I'm more suspicious if they're great people, by the way.
Yeah, that's in general. I don't believe anyone's nice. But anyway, I don't care about any of that. I sincerely don't. Like, again, if they're getting arrested, you know, if there's reason for concern, like Joe Mixon, when that happened, obviously I was concerned because I was like, this dude might go to prison. I don't know if I want to draft him. Now, when it got all settled, and obviously it was several years before the actual draft.
Right.
But I don't concern myself with that too much. Now, yeah, I guess I could come back and bite you when you have a player like AB, where it goes to the point that it actually does affect on the field, even though he wasn't really getting arrested from what I remember, although he did eventually.
Well, the CTE must have kicked in at some point. Yeah. You know, I mean, I know we joke about brain damage, but look, I mean, Antonio Brown, he was always a little volatile, but 5 years of wide receiver one overall, plus when he was, you know, with the other teams, the draft costs was like no longer pick one. It was like round four. So it was commensurate with the risk.
And here's the thing, like, can you pick that out? Did anyone think Michael Vick, obviously he's not college, but did anyone think Michael Vick was going to be going to prison at any point? Like, was there, I don't remember any chatter about him being a bad dude before it came out that he was in a dog fighting ring.
Right. And I agree with you there that, like, I don't worry about, like, I know people, and listen, if you want to take a moral stance on a player, I have no problem with it, but look, I'm the type of dynasty player. Like, I was buying Deshaun Watson. Now, it hasn't worked out yet, but I still got him. At the time, he was valued as like QB10. You were paying like a single first round pick for him. And, you know, I always made the joke that, like, I'll draft Saddam Hussein if it gets me fantasy points, Shane. You know, like, I'm not going to worry about character stuff. So, all right. So when I meant character stuff, though, I meant more of like, okay, Caleb Williams paints his nails. He cries, you know, all that stuff. Marvin Harrison won't show up and do any of the pro day stuff.
So the thing about Caleb that annoys me is, so I'm very much of the newer generation, even though I'm old, of it's okay to show your feelings as a man.
Like, how old are you, Shane? How old a guy are you?
45. Okay. 45. So I don't have a problem with that, right? And I have boys, and I try to explain to them, like, you know, don't be a robot and don't hold your feelings in so that you explode and, you know, shoot up to school one day. Like, it's okay to show emotion. And Caleb Williams shows emotion. Like, we're trashing this kid because he cares too much. You know what I mean? Like, he cried after a loss. Like, okay. It upset him. Like, clearly, is that – I don't understand how that's a detriment. Like, the dude cares that much.
I see it as a plus as well, right? Because he's not afraid to what people are thinking of him.
Right. He paints his nails. Who does that bother? To me, it bothers people that have some other issues with other types of things in the world. Doesn't bother me one shit. You know, he paints his nails. The only way it would bother me is if some of the paint got on the front of his fingers and was causing his passes to sail. Mm-hmm. Then I'd be like, bro, you can't do this. Other than that, I don't care. Marvin Harrison not working out. Why should he? And I used to, this is when, you know, when kids started sitting out the bowl games and people would get mad at them.
Christian McCaffrey.
Like, yeah. I'm like, dude, these kids have literally tens of millions, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars on the line. Why should they go play in a bowl game for a school? And back then, that they can't even make money off their own name. Like, this school, these schools are making billions off of these kids, and we get mad at them for sitting out a bowl game? Like, no, stop it. Like, these kids make all that money, and that's why I'm generally 98% of the time I'm on the player side for everything.
Yeah.
You know, when people bitch that a player's asking for too much money, I'm like, you realize how much they actually generate? Like, it's not even close. Like, if they can pay, for example, just different sport, Mike Trout, $500 million, think about how much revenue they're making. They're making that tenfold. And in the NFL, it's a money printing machine. So I'll always be on the player side. But yeah. Caleb Williams, I don't see that as character issues. He's just a kid. You know what I mean? Whatever. He cries when he gets upset, like a human, and he paints his nails. I don't care. Whatever. Like I said, as long as it's not on the front of his fingers and his passes are sound.
Yeah.
Marvin Harrison's smart for sitting out. There's no reason for him. What could he do to increase his stock?
He can only have it drop. And, you know, you have to assume he has a promise. The agent has a promise that, hey, we're going to take you if you're there at pick 5, no matter what, or pick 6, no matter what. Or they just instinctively know it. And something else you just said, it resonated with me about how most people do the bidding of the owners, or they do a bidding of the corporation. We call them free interns over here, right? The interns, because they're out. I mean, the same thing, you know, during the lockdowns, people were telling, you know, we're doing the bidding of the corporations in some, you know, some way. But yeah, like, oh my God, he's not worth that money. And it's like, dude, Jerry Jeudy, for example, right? Like, good for him, man. The guy has like a career so far that's not met expectations, able to secure $41 million. Yeah. I mean, I wish I could do that. You know, wish I could do that with RotoWire, secure a $41 million contract.
Hold out.
Exactly. Good point there. You know, I had another question for you here as far as let me see here. I have a whole list of stuff for you, Shane. All right. Let's get into some of the actual busts that you maybe identify, because I know people are going to want specific names. Right. Of our first round ADP rookies. Right. Which one of them now stands out, whether any position, by the way, it could be quarterback, running back, tight end, wide receiver. Which one has you a little bit? If you were like picking, we'll start in the first 3 or 4 picks of ADP and Superflex drafts. Which one are you a little bit most worried about that I don't want to call it a red flag, but there's a small yellow flag popping up at this point, and why?
All right, this is going to sound wildly racist. I have problems with athletic white quarterbacks. they scare me. Just off the history of what I've seen, like all I picture is Daniel Jones, right? I don't picture Steve Young, who was the forefather of it. I picture Daniel Jones and me going, oh no, this is going to happen again. So it's probably not his fault. And again, I listen to you know, NFL podcasts, and most of the scouts rave over him. Drake.
What's your favorite NFL podcast?
The Athletic. The Athletic. I mean, they have a feed, obviously. They have 5 days a week. There's
so which
Daniel
which
Jeremiah. Daniel Jeremiah one. And then he's also on Move the Sticks, him and Bucky Brooks. Mm-hmm. So I think I just follow him around, actually, and just listen to what he says. But that dude is like next level.
So who's the athletic white quarterback that you're a little dubious of this
Drake
time?
Drake May. And I, you know, what's weird is I don't know what it is that scares me.
Right, but there's something. And again, this could be totally irrational. Yeah. Is it that the, you know, because one of the questions I had for you is, what are your thoughts on drafting rookies with high athletic upside but limited production? I mean, obviously that doesn't fit here exactly, does it?
Anthony Richardson last year, I was slow to come around on. But by the time the drafts rolled around, our rookie drafts, I was like, bro, give me all of him. Like, just he's an absolute monster. Like, if he puts it together, the things he could do, like Jaden Daniels doesn't fit here because his Heisman season. But prior to this year, it was probably just mostly tools and upside. Well, prior to last year. But now I'm always about getting the athletic people at their position because right. You can't teach that, you know.
You know, I forget. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, hopefully you can refine route running. You can refine passing accuracy, things like that. And no, it doesn't always work. There's a lot of busts in those cohorts, but you just can't teach that athleticism, that next level athleticism.
I hope I'm giving proper credit here. I think it was Adam Harstead. I read something from him that was put in front of me a couple years ago. And if it's not Adam, I'm so sorry. But someone said, basically, like, when you take the second round wide receivers, right? Because, you know, we can always talk ourselves into a first round wide receiver. Draft capital has everything baked in from the draft process, and then you can make your decision. It's the second round players where, look, Rashee Rice last year, right? Jaden Reed, those guys would obviously, if we were to redo our rookie draft from last year, would be in the first round, and now they're in the second round. So Adam had said something like, always look for the non-athletic guy that gets drafted higher than the athletic guy, because that guy is actually good at football. And I think that's what you're talking about with like the route running and this and that. Yeah. So beware of the athletic guy. So that's really like, I want to push this question back on your plate again.
I was just going to say, so that, you know, hearing it said out loud, that makes sense, because if you're overlooking the fact that someone's not athletic because of their production, or they're good at football, you can project it, right? Because that's what NFL scouts do. That's what teams do. They're projecting what this player is going to be at the next level. If you can go, or if you feel that a player is well outproduced someone that has benefits, you know, if I'm more athletically gifted than you, I should be able to outperform you. If I just have this same work ethic, I don't know if that's the right word, or if I had the same skill set, the same actual, like you said, the route running, all that stuff, I would blow you out of the water. So that is a good point, but I'm always going to be a guy that just shoots monster upside. Like, I'm always going to do it. So I'm always going to lean towards athleticism.
Yep. This is the question. I think it's like, I'm assuming you've been asked this on podcasts before, but listen, our audience might not be familiar with him. By the way, I have Shane Manila here, and he is one of the hosts of Dynasty Trades in Five. So if you love Dynasty Fantasy Football and you listen to this podcast, go subscribe to Dynasty Trades in Five podcast, and we'll do all your plugs, and everything will be in the description below. But it's an addicting show that you guys do over there. Talk about Dynasty Trades. And what's something I hear you often talk about is that when someone says player or pick and you take the pick, it's not because necessarily you're going to make a draft pick, but explain why your default philosophy is, hey, I'm not going to make this pick necessarily. I'm going to take this pick and try to do something else with that. Explain the concept and why you found that to be helpful for your dynasty strategy.
So all my strategies are super simple, right? Flexibility and fungibility. I want something that I can do something else with. A player, regardless of the player's name, it's limited as to what I can do with that player. There's going to be a limited market for it, and there's probably going to be a limited amount of, well, not just a market, but a limited amount of people that even want that player or could even get that player. Players can get injured. Rookie picks have never gotten injured, not yet. Obviously, once you make the pick, the player can get injured. The pick is something that generally everyone likes. You can't find someone that goes, oh, I don't like that 104 pick. That's no God. I don't like the 110 pick. And even better, if it's a future pick, like a 25 pick, well, that's the mystery box. It could literally be anything. It could be the 101. So it has that psychological pull to it that a player doesn't. Specific players, you know, if you get to Jordan Addison, for example, JSN, who are players that some people like, they like them a lot. And then there's other people like me with JSN where I'm like, reroll that dude immediately. Like it's cut bait.
Explain reroll. I know what you mean, but explain just what reroll means.
So you have a rookie wide receiver. I guess it, in theory, it could be any position, but it just seems to be wide receiver. You have a rookie wide receiver that doesn't produce to the expectations that
a Jahan Dotson type.
Jahan Dotson had a decent rookie season. He's a dude I would have re-rolled on because his touchdown rate was it wasn't sustainable. But he's also, a good example. So it's really any rookie player at the end of their rookie year re-rolling for a pick, getting a pick in the future or in the coming draft class because you think you can get a better player or because you know, again, you can use that pick. You can add it to something else. Right. It might be easier for me to use the 110 and the 106 to get to the 103 than it would for me to use Jahan Dotson, the 106 to the 103. I couldn't do it. Even at the time when Jahan Dotson was thought of highly.
JSN qualifies this year. I know you've done some good pieces of content on why the downside of JSN, but there's still optimism. Is he an example of a reroll player?
100% for me, 100%. And part of the reroll is the player has to have a market, you know, like I couldn't reroll Sky Moore, not for a first, like after his rookie season, it was like, if you could get a third, you take it, you know, right. That's just getting out on the player. To me, rerolling is like this player still has value, maybe 90% in some cases, the full value that they had the year before, but usually 80-90% of the value that they had at the time you drafted them. And JSN's a perfect example. There are people that are out on them, and then there are people, you know, people like me that are out on them. And then there's other people that are like, no, you know, look at the context of the situation. Like you're not taking that into account enough. And what's most important about that, it doesn't even matter why they disagree with me. There's a portion of the population that does disagree with me, which also brings me to a kind of adjacent point. I won't just trade him for anything. I'm not giving him up for the 112. Like I'll even take the loss, hold him on my team and never trade him. Knowing that that's not what his market is. I know his market should be higher than that, so I'm not just going to trade him for a 112.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So when you say, okay, that now this is the piece that I think is really actionable here. Okay, JSN, chances are you drafted him 106-ish last year. Mm-hmm. So if you have him and you don't like him on your team and someone says, hey, I'll take JSN off your team. Here's the 109. That's right outside that quote, like elite tier break. that feels like a 75-80% money back value. Is that the right? Yeah. Am I thinking about this correctly?
Yeah, I'll take that. And, you know, part of that is that 1.0. There's still an O in front of it, And again, psychologically, it's the whole, when you go to the store, if something's 99 cents, it's less than a dollar and it sells better. Like, that's just proven fact. I don't know why. It's just how our brains work. So that O in front of it still makes that pick intrinsic more valuable than it would be at 110, even though it's just one pick. And again, what can I do with that one? I got to add something to it. And then I can move up further, you know, like the Eagles did when they traded up for Carson Wentz. Like, it appears the Vikings are doing to trade up for someone.
Yep. We just got a question in the chat from our friend Anthony. Said about, and I think you answered it already. It says, when you re-roll, what percentage it should be? It should feel at least like 75%. That should be like your threshold.
Right. And again, unless you're just trying to get out on the player, I'm trying to think of a first round bust, but let's just say that someone you drafted at 104 last year, Bryce Young.
Well,
there you go.
Okay. There you go. Okay. Bryce Young. So you would take 112 for Bryce Young.
I wouldn't, but other people would, because you're getting out on him. I'm still stupid and believe in him, even though he's a midget and there's no reason, because nothing he did last year showed you any reason to believe in him. But that's just, I'll take anything. And you're 100% losing 90% of the value you spent on him, but you're trying to get out on the player. Because if you look at his historical comps based off what he did in his rookie season, it is not good. You should be, as a process, be trying to move off of him. I'm holding on to him just because.
Yeah. Well, the 101 has a very, I think, defies all of the, like, the metric stuff, because the 101 has a very special insulation, especially when a team trades up for the 101. And 101 is very different than 102 or 103, or certainly, 110, meaning that player has to be historically bad, which Bryce Young was, and he's still going to get 3 years to prove it. Like, that doesn't happen with 102. Sometimes it's 2 years, right? But 101s, I'm talking specifically 101s that we traded up for, there, because a lot of times they moved off the draft capital. No one's going to do anything. So you're like, all right, we'll just go one more time. So I think, if Bryce Young would have to be worse than last year for it to be 2 years. If he's as good, which wasn't good, or average and shows any progress, now you're talking a 3 year minimum insulation.
Right. Yeah. I'll say this, as I've been playing, obviously, for a long time because I'm old. And I've seen patience get less and less as the years have gone on. And part of it is the NFL has gone, you know what? We don't have to hold on to this rookie quarterback for 5 years. Like, we've seen all we need to see, Kenny Pickett. We need you to just go, please. And I feel like dynasty players are rightly taking that approach too, sometimes. Again, not at wide receiver for some reason, but definitely at quarterback. Like, we are quick to go, all right, this dude's a bust, I'm gone. And lately, it's been correct. Like, if you would have gotten off of Kenny Pickett after year one, perfect. Which is, the more I talk about this, maybe I should really get off of Bryce Young. But I'm still going to hold on. I'm still going to hold on to him.
What's the biggest leak in your dynasty game, Shane? The one that you already know, you could see the water coming in on the boat, but you still need to fix it.
There's a couple things. There's a few things, right? I definitely get really tunneled vision. I get really...
on a player, or what do you mean by tunnel vision?
In general, I see my little bubble of the groups I play in, like you were saying earlier, and I can't sometimes wrap my head around the full league, not just my league economy, I should say the full macro view of the entire dynasty community. So someone will ask me about a trade, and I'm like, there's no way you'll get that done. And they'll come back to me later, and they're like, yeah, I got it done. And I'm like, that's it. Like, to me, it's a terrible trade, but I have to remember, like, just because I don't value it that way, leagues value things how they value them, which is why, and people hate them, but I love KTC because it gives me a view.
Keep trade cut.
Yeah. It gives me a wider view. And I go to that a lot to go, all right, this is what people think about them, regardless of what I think about them. So sometimes I trade a player on how I value them before going, well, how does the market value them? Because that's actually more important. If I just don't value someone like JSN, and this is like where I'm trying to have the discipline to go, in the past, I'd go, give me any first, I'll get out on JSN because I don't value him. Now I go, well, the market does though, so I shouldn't have to do that. So I'm not going to do that. There's no rush. I'm just going to hold on to him. I have, 6 more months to move him. There's all this positive narrative that could come his way. God forbid one of Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf could get hurt. Seattle could draft a quarterback. It doesn't matter. There's going to be the camp buzz that he looks better than he ever did. They're going to give him more targets than they ever would have. And then they can move him at that point instead of moving him now.
And you referenced keep, trade, cut. And again, this is one of those things where we take for granted because we use the tool. But for anyone that plays Dynasty Fantasy Football that might be newer to it or just hasn't discovered, keeptradecut.com is it's a wonderful website, good tool, free. And it shows you basically the market evaluation, not necessarily rankings, right? But how ADP, mock drafts, real trades that are happening. And it gives you how the market. And then, for example, last year at this time, Garrett Wilson was ranked as the wide receiver 3, and that's how the overall market was seeing him, even if he was like wide receiver 7 in your ranking. So what Shane just said there, a great piece of actionable advice as far as look, don't just use your own evaluations. Look how the market is. And KTC, keeptradecut.com, is a good way to get the market pulse. And again, trade calculators, we know that like when someone sends you a trade and says, here's the screenshot of the trade calculator, we know that that's like almost like a faux pas because we don't value them like that, but just that's good information to have yourself. And Shane, my last couple of questions are about trading. Give me we'll start with a couple of things. What are a couple of trading tips, do's and don'ts, like etiquette wise or ways that you have found that you've successfully been able to trade? So, because, you know, we can go over all of, like, the cliche things that you see that people do in trading that just piss you off. Mm-hmm. But what are a couple of the do's and don'ts that you found that you can give out tips to our listeners for trading in Dynasty Fantasy Football?
Respond. Mm-hmm. Just respond. You know, there's so many times that, and I make a lot of trades. And part of it, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because I make a lot of trades. So people go, when they want to make trades, they go, well, I know Shane's reasonable. Like, and that's the other one of the things is don't try to price gouge. Sometimes you get a little cute and you're like, no, I need that extra fourth in this deal to make it happen. When the only reason you're doing that is to feel like you can win the trade. It's like, oh, I got another asset, even though that asset is worth nothing, you know, the pride thing. But respond to trades, literally respond to trades.
Why do you think people don't respond to trades?
I don't know. I have legitimately no reason. There's a few that have expired on me. But it's only because I've literally like I'm doing something else. I've opened the trade on my phone and then I start doing something else and then I completely forget about it and I feel awful and I like, oh dude, I'm so sorry. But like I'm responsive. As soon as you send me a trade, I'm looking at it. Hopefully not when I'm driving. And I know pretty quickly whether it's something I want or not. You know, I'd say 90% of the trade offers I get, I go, yeah, no, or yes. Like, that's perfect. Right. There's no reason for me to even negotiate with them. Like, that's perfect deal. I'm good with it. I'm not risking it.
If it's not a hell yes, it's a no, right?
Right. And then, you know, there's some that I will go, all right, I need to crowdsource this. Let me drop this in the trade channel on Discord with our patrons and see if they can give me some thoughts on this because I know I can get a little aggressive. So respond. Try not to send trash trade offers, right? Obvious ones. Don't send something like Sky Moore and a 26 first for Justin Jefferson right. And go, well, that's a process trade. You're getting a wide receiver and a pick. Like, be
send trades that you would accept yourself.
Right. Or at least you would think about, you know, make it close. Don't do something like that. Someone in there noted communication is key. It actually is. I hate talking to people. I'll tell you that right now. I am not a fan of talking to people. I don't like DMing. I don't like texting. I hate this right now. I'm in so much physical pain. And I do this like 6 times a week. So you can just imagine how much it's.
But yet it feeds your lifeblood. Talking about football, interacting with people, right. You know. So, you know, right. I'm thoroughly enjoying it, but I do understand the sentiment. I'm not offended, right. Shane. Not offended.
People DM you, respond to them, or just DM someone and don't be a dick about it. Like, how long are you going to let that trade sit out there? Dude, just be like, hey, maybe I don't know if you missed it, but I sent an offer. Let me know what you think. Two, send offers. I don't even know what order I'm going in. I'm on two now. Next one will be B. Actually, send offers. Don't be the dude that goes to someone and go, what do you want for so and so? I don't know.
I want an offer
because you want him. First of all, you've given me that information. Now I'm gathering information. I know you want this player.
Don't make me do the homework. I don't want a homework assignment.
And so why should I have to tell you what I want for when you're the one that wants the player? Like, I wasn't even thinking about trading them. I'm just hanging out. Life's good. Me and Justin Jefferson, we're good. There's nothing in between us that's going wrong. You want to come take him from me. Well, what are you giving? Don't make me, exactly like you said, don't make me be the dude that's got to do the homework.
Yeah. What do you want for this guy? Is the word. Okay. There's the trade tip. Don't say, what do you want for this guy?
You know, because
I get a lot. I have a lot of Josh Allen in my portfolio of, 40 plus dynasty leagues, because the year that he was still going in the third round of Superflex, that's when I scooped him up again. I got lucky, or I had a feeling on him, whatever. But I get a lot of, what do you want for Josh Allen's? And my response is, make me an offer I can't refuse. Like, I call it a Godfather offer, because, you remember the Godfather one. Yeah, make me an offer I can't. Yep.
And that's how I respond to people a lot. Like, oh, what do you want for Ja'Marr Chase? Well, what do you think? He's the wide receiver 3 in Dynasty or 2. So a lot. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to give you a firm discount. Like, right now, someone's trying to trade to get C.J. Stroud and Malik Nabers off of. Well, what do we need to do to get this done? You need to send a better offer. I keep declining your offers, and not in a dick way. Like, this just isn't going to get it done for me. So you need to make a better offer.
Shane, you did it, baby. You did it, man. You came here. You delivered, as always. I enjoy talking to you. And let everybody know about the most important thing that you want them to pay attention to, and where also they can find you on social media.
Oh, geez. Pay attention. Excuse me. Not to pro days. Pro days don't matter.
No, I meant to the stuff you're working on.
Like the stuff I'm working on?
Yeah. Oh. This is the time where you get to plug your shit. Come on.
It's funny. I just assume everyone knows me because I live in a bubble. And then you go outside of that bubble and you're like,
our audience might be seeing you for the first time. You never know. Yeah. There's still a lot of people.
No, 1,000%. Absolutely. No one outside of like a small percentage of the population knows who I am. Dynasty Trades in 5 every Tuesday at 8:30. We also do a stream of 5 minutes on a player with Alan, myself and Scott on Thursdays between 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. We also,
and let's talk about that. So you, me and Scott Connor, we're recording a series of 5 minute trade videos where we look into your Patreon and find out what players are being discussed, traded. And we break down, we put up some of the trades and we break that down. That's every Thursday around 8:30 on the Dynasty Trades in 5 YouTube channel. So if you love quick trade information and you and Scott debate, I kind of moderate the debate, referee it a little bit. And I think I love the concept and I appreciate you guys bringing me in on that. So, and then also on Twitter X, where can they find you?
At Shane is the worst.
Love it.
I chose that name. So no one feel bad for me. and then written content, I'm over at Destination Devi. I actually just started my own show several weeks ago, Shane Says, on YouTube and podcast.
I enjoy that, by the way. Feed.
Yeah, it was just as an aside. It was I've been a part of a group for my entire podcasting, YouTubing time. So it was very very anyone that does podcasts by themselves, like I didn't know how hard it is, because it's difficult for me to be like, oh, I don't have anyone else to bounce things off of. Like, I'm literally just talking for 20 minutes. Like, this is kind of rough, but it's fun. It's getting there.
Yeah, and let me just talk about that, because your podcast series called Shane Says, I think you do a good job at it. You are, not everyone's made for the solo podcast. Like, you already outlined that it's a whole different animal. It's less conversational. It's more like, hey, I'm talking to you. It's more personal. And anytime I'm doing like solo videos, I try to like at least have them like scripted out. I'm sure you have bullet points of things you want to talk about, but I'll pay you this compliment. And it's only going to get better. A year from now, you're going to look back at your content and say, oh my God, like it just, you're going to cringe. But off the bat, I would say I watch the videos, and if I'm paying it just by default, if I'm paying attention to them, it means they're good. So I think you're doing a good job, which kind of leads me into my next question is, you said you're doing written stuff. You said you're doing, you do group podcasts, you're doing solo podcasts. Right now, and I know this changes over time, what's your favorite part, of the part that's getting you most excited? What form of the, content or, anything that you've been doing in the fantasy football space?
So this is probably none of the above. My favorite's just digging in the stats right now. Things pop in your head and you go, I wonder what that is. So then I was digging into the last 5 years of first round rookie picks. 1 through 12, obviously, in rookie drafts, and just seeing basically how many wide receiver 1 seasons they've provided, how many wide receiver 2 seasons, how many top 6 seasons provided, how many players have hit those thresholds. Stuff like that's kind of fun for me. I don't have the bandwidth for that in season, obviously. In season, I enjoy writing because it's like, all right, I can sit back and think something through. But all of it. Like, how could you not love all of this? You get to do this and people give a shit what you think and want to hear you talk or write. Like, that's just awesome. Like, so all of it, really. And that's not the cop out.
It's not a cop out. That's an honest answer. I when I first started doing this, I did a lot, mostly writing. I was like working over at Roster Watch, pumping out 3-4 articles a week, and then you know, you go into other things like podcasting, radio stuff. So it's I like all the interaction as well. I think it's a good point that you made there. Just if anyone who just focuses on one thing, that's when it can get a little monotonous and boring, in my opinion. So if anyone right now wants to get a peek behind RotoWire's paywall, we're gonna let you do it for free, Shane. Okay. So you just go to rotowire.com/pod, rotowire.com/pod. You just put in your email. And RotoWire paywall unlocks for 2 days. There's nothing to cancel. There's no credit card to put in. So what's more annoying than when you have to like remember to cancel your credit card? So this, you just put in your email and then it lapses if you don't subscribe. So if you want to get behind our paywall, all our Dynasty premium content there, baseball rankings. I think we have the best baseball guys in the business. Postseason, fantasy, basketball, golf, NASCAR, everything. So rotowire.com/pod gets you behind the paywall for 2 days to put in your email. Shane, I appreciate you, man. I'm looking forward to doing more work with you as the months go on here. And everyone, we will be back next week with another Dynasty Fantasy Football podcast.
Noise, noise, the sun goes down.